Welcome back, friends. So glad you could join us. We continue our examination of the documents of Vatican II. In this episode, we're going to look at the Declaration on Christian Education, its Latin title, Gravissimum Educationis, most important aspect of education. As we look at this document, we see that the Council Fathers wanted to convey to us the great importance of education, not just for our youth, for youth's sake, but because they're the very future of our society, of the human race. It's the youth that grow up to become the future priests and sisters, moms and dads, the leaders of the world and of society. So this document makes it clear that education isn't just something that is for teachers, students, parents, but for all of us. In this document, beginning with paragraph number 1, we see, all men of whatever race, condition, or age, in virtue of their dignity as human persons, have an inalienable right to education. The very fact that you and I are human, we are a person, we deserve an education. It's not just for the rich. It's not for people of any particular class, culture, race, or religion. Every human being has an inalienable right to education. Why is that? Because man is made in the image and likeness of God. In our human nature, we have an intellect and a will. God has an intellect and a will. His divine intellect and will is different than ours because his divine intellect and will are infinite. But our intellect and will, that's what makes us in the image and likeness of God. And the intellect seeks the truth, whereas the will seeks the good. And in the pursuit of truth, education serves to feed that intellect the means by which one knows the truth. So every human being has a right to know the truths of the world. As St. Thomas Aquinas would explain for us in his Summa Theologica, there are like three levels of truth. There are the scientific truths that we learn from science by observation, experimentation, that water is composed of two parts hydrogen, one part oxygen, H2O. There's philosophical truths that we learn from using pure reason. For example, the principle of non-contradiction, something cannot be and not be at the same time. For instance, I cannot be alive and dead at the same time. They're exclusionary principles. I either am alive or I'm dead. I can't be both. And then there are theological truths, truths that God reveals, truths that are necessary for salvation. For instance, that there are three persons in the Trinity. In Jesus Christ, there are two natures, human and divine, hypostatically united to the one divine person of Jesus Christ. So the pursuit of truth is something that every human being has a right to, has a need to. Therefore, everyone has a right to education. As this document goes on, as they grow older, due weight must be given to the advances in psychological, pedagogical, intellectual sciences. For children and young people should be helped to develop harmoniously their physical, moral, and intellectual qualities. The Council Fathers want to convey to us the importance of having a well-rounded education, not to just know content to get a job. So many times when young people go to college, they want to get a degree, and they only want to take subjects that will help them in the workplace, in their career. But as we read someone like Cardinal Newman, and we look back in the Middle Ages, the great importance of a liberal arts education, where a person was well-rounded. They studied music, history, literature, science, philosophy, and theology. It helped them give a grasp of the whole world in its totality, rather than a very limited, narrow view of just one aspect, whether it's career-oriented or just that's the subject I'm interested in. Everybody was expected to know a variety of subjects. As the document continues in paragraph 2, all Christians, that is, all those having been reborn in water and the Holy Spirit, are called, and in fact, children of God, have a right to a Christian education. So the fact that you and I are human means we have a right to education, to know. Because we're Christian, we have a right to a Christian education. By baptism, we have a right and a duty to know about Christian faith. How does this come about? Well, the document specifies in paragraph 3, it is the parents who have been given life to their children and on them lies the gravest obligation of educating their family. It's not enough just to bring them into the world, to put a roof over their head, to put a meal in front of them, to get them clothes and love. Those are all important things, but it must be continued, and they must give them a good education. And because their children, God willing, are baptized, should be, that they are going to give them a Christian education. They're going to learn about Jesus Christ. They're going to learn about God, not just at school, but in the home. For as we know, the home has been called the seminary of life. A person learns about God and the church first from their mother and father, then from going to church. So education is extremely crucial, not just to the human person on a broad base, but specifically for the Christian, because that helps them. The more we know truth, the more we'll know about God, because God is the author and source of all truth. In paragraph 4, we're told, chief among the important instruments is catechetical instruction. In recent times, there have been so many crazy hypotheses and theories on revising Christian education, whether it's in the Catholic school or in the CCD program. They want to get away from catechetics, having the children memorize certain things, particularly, say, the commandments, or the Beatitudes. Unfortunately, they don't realize that that's part of learning. When Johnny or Susie goes to school, they have to learn their alphabet before they can spell words. They have to learn their multiplication and times tables before they can do differential calculus. How can we expect them to appreciate the truths of our faith if they don't know the rudimentary fundamental principles? One of the first things we learned when we were growing up, why did God make me? God made me to know, love, and serve Him in this world so as to be happy with Him in the next. What is a sacrament? An outward sign instituted by Christ to give grace. Anyone who's learned those definitions can give them to you at the drop of a hat. They know that. Because once it's learned as a child, the hope then is it will be understood as an adult. But before it can be understood, it must be known, must be memorized. So catechetics is conveying the fundamentals to the children, and then when they're old enough, you can explain it in further detail. What has happened in recent times is that children learned the fundamental basics, but then there was no follow-up. So we had people with PhDs in astrophysics, and yet they still had their eighth grade concept of religion, and it didn't fit into their new adult world. We went to the opposite extreme. When I was growing up, we didn't have too many fundamental basics. Right in the middle of school, we got our catechisms pulled away, and we got books with bunny rabbits and butterflies and sunbeams, and Jesus loves you. Yes, He loves me, but I want to know more about Him. He's the Son of God. He's the second person of the Trinity. What am I expected to do as a Christian? What are my duties, my responsibilities? So catechetical education is so important, and the document tells us this. So when people say Vatican II took out catechetics, they're not reading the document. We read in paragraph number 5, among the various organs of education, the school is of outstanding importance. It goes without saying that the school is going to be the place where the children learn the most in terms of academic and scholarly endeavors. At home, they learn important principles and values, right and wrong. They learn about love. They learn about sin. They learn about owning up to responsibility. When they do wrong, they have to accept the consequences of their actions. But at school, they learn the fundamental basics, whether it's math, science, history, English, but also religion. And as we see, this document is going to tell us it is of great importance that they not only get a secular education, but a religious one as well. Paragraph 6 tells us parents who have a primary an inalienable duty and right in regard to the education of their children to enjoy the fullest liberty in the choice of the school. Now, Lumen Gentium, paragraph 11, reminded us that parents are the primary teachers. You cannot understate that. Parents are the primary teachers. Parents are the ones who form the children in the very beginning of their life. And it's the parents who decide where the kids go to school. The parents must also make sure that the kids are doing their homework, that they're learning something. And so parents have to get involved. And as this paragraph tells us, they should have the fullest liberty in the choice of their school. So that would involve many programs we see today involving school choice, not only on a political or social economic level, but even in terms of ramifications at diocesan and parish levels too. Because parents should be able to send their children where they believe that they will get the best education possible. But it's not just I drop Johnny off to school and let them do the rest. I must support them, help them. It is a team effort between the school and the parents with the child. Six goes on to tell us, because it's the duty of the state to ensure all its citizens have access to an adequate education and are prepared for proper exercise of their civic rights and duties, the state itself, therefore, should safeguard the rights of children to an adequate education in schools. It goes without saying that one of the fundamental principles of the state is to protect its citizens. So we have police, we have fire, we have ambulance that protect us on those levels when there's crime, when there's disaster, when there's sickness. We have schools that the state supports because everyone's guaranteed to an education, no matter what their religion or their political persuasion. At the same time, the state must recognize that there is a necessity for Christians to have a Christian education. How that works out in the political realm is something that you and I as citizens need to express to our representatives and legislators. But we can't just sit back and let someone else work it out for us. Parents are reminded again in paragraph 7 of their grave obligation to make all necessary arrangements and even to insist that their children be able to take advantage in services and thus enjoy a balanced progress in their Christian formation and preparation for life. If their children are not able to go to a parochial school, or if the parochial school is not adequate for various reasons, perhaps the education there is not up to the caliber that it should be, perhaps they're not teaching the true Orthodox faith, as sadly happens at times, then maybe the parents have to investigate alternatives, as in homeschooling. Or if they're going to send them to public school, make sure that the CCD program is excellent, is Orthodox. Because if it's not, they're going to have to supplant it. They can't just say, well, it's not my fault. The parish didn't give us enough material or it was mediocre. No. It says here the parents are reminded of their grave obligation. A parent would not blink their eye if they went to a doctor and the doctor wasn't adequate. They'd say, that's it. I'm taking my kid somewhere else. I'm taking my kid to a doctor where you're concerned about my child and you know what you should know and you're going to do what you have to do. Parents have to be the same way in terms of the education of their children, both the secular education and the religious education. They have to insist that their children learn the faith. They have to insist that they learn the true faith, not some hypothesis, not some speculative theology, but what children of their age should know. And so the church has given us national and general catechetical directories. We have the Catechism of the Catholic Church, which is available now everywhere. There is no excuse for anyone to say they don't know what the faith is. In paragraph 9, we're told, although Catholic schools may assume various forms according to local circumstances, all schools which are in any way dependent on the church should conform as far as possible to church teachings. It's important to note that the church has an interest in education. Therefore, it is our business to be in schools, to have Catholic schools, elementary, high school, college, because education, as we mentioned, is an inalienable right. And we have to ensure that the Christian education is also properly conveyed. In this document, we see in paragraph 10, the church likewise devotes considerable care to higher level education, especially universities. We've seen in recent times with the Vatican document, Ex Cordia Ecclesiae, the Holy See's interest in making sure that people who teach religion in Catholic schools do so properly, that they have a mandate, mandatum, from the local bishop, that they're authorized to teach Orthodoxy, and if they're not willing to, or if they don't, then they need to be removed. One of the other things that this document points out that many people sort of slide under the rug at times, the mentioning of the tradition of the doctors of the church, especially St. Thomas Aquinas. There are so many times the angelic doctor is mentioned in Vatican II, and I have to laugh because so many people will tell me from time to time, well, Vatican II got rid of that Thomistic stuff. Got rid of it. We saw in the education of priests that seminarians should learn about Thomistic philosophy. Here on Christian education, we're told that in a Catholic college, it should be taught the traditions of the fathers of the church, especially St. Thomas Aquinas. So if your son or daughter is going to a Catholic college and they don't have one single course on Thomism, pull them out. In Catholic universities in which there's no faculty of sacred theology, there should be an institute or course of theology in which lectures may be given, suited also for the needs of lay students. In the Middle Ages, the university, and note that the university grew up out of the church. Today in America, most of our universities are secular. In Europe, the university was begun by religious orders, the Dominicans, the Franciscans, the Jesuits, and so on, the Benedictines. The university grew out of these orders as centers of learning, primarily to educate their own novices, their own postulants, but also the clergy of the area. And then as time went on, the lay people would go and get degrees. So today, the overwhelming majority of students in many Catholic schools do not have a particularly religious vocation, yet they are seeking the truth, and they deserve an unadulterated Catholic education. This document then tells us pastors of the church should not only be assiduous in their care for the spiritual life of students attending Catholic universities, but in their solicitude for the spiritual formation of all their flock. They should provide, by joint episcopal action, the establishment of Catholic residence and centers even in the non-Catholic universities. It goes without saying that at a Catholic college, there should be a chapel. There should be daily mass. There should be confessions. If there's not, it's not a Catholic college. How can it be a Catholic college if the sacraments are not offered, if the truth isn't being taught? At the same time, in secular colleges or non-Catholic universities, where the church is not the one who owns the property, is not the one who runs the school, the Vatican Council encouraged what we call today the Newman Centers, places where the young men and women can go and get some Catholic influence, where a chaplain would be there to provide weekly mass so the kids can go to mass on Sunday, where the kids can go and make a good confession, where there can be spiritual direction. There are many places in the United States that dioceses have assigned a priest in the area, and these Newman Centers exist. But just like you have to investigate the Catholic school to make sure it's Orthodox, so too if you're a parent, you have to look at these Newman Centers if your son or daughter is going to a non-Catholic school and see if that Newman Center is truly Orthodox. If it is, it is a blessing. If not, I wouldn't want my son or daughter going there. We also have in some colleges, other places, study centers. Opus Dei has a number of them where the sacraments are provided, spiritual direction is available. Places where there may not be a Newman Center, or if there is one, it may not be the one that we would prefer. The document goes on to tell us that it is the duty of every person, every believer, to get involved in education. It's not just for, like I said, the parent who has a son or daughter in school. It's not just for the teacher. It's not just for the pastor who's got some kids away in school. But all of us should be involved, even in the parish level. In the parish where I'm assigned now, in Middletown, Pennsylvania, Seven Sorrows, we send on a regular basis, at our pastor's request, letters to all the men and women from our parish who are at college. We let them know that we're praying for them. We send them prayer books, rosaries, Bibles, catechisms. We let them know that we're praying for them. We remind them that we are encouraging them to go to Mass regularly. We don't want them to think that because they're away at college, they're no longer a part of our parish. They still are. And when they come home on holidays and they're with their families again, we don't want that to be the only time that they feel that they're a part of the parish. Just like the men and women who serve the armed forces, they're still part of the parish. So too those who are at college. So this document concludes by exhorting students themselves to appreciate the excellence of the teacher's vocation, to realize that many teachers, especially teachers at Catholic schools, take a great sacrifice to be there. They could be making a lot more money in the secular world, at a secular college, or doing a different career. But many of them take the big cut in salary because they're committed and devoted to Catholic education. Many of these teachers spend long hours for their students' benefit. They will speak to parents. They'll speak to principals, the pastor. I know so many good Catholic school teachers who at times feel no one supporting them, whether it's the priest or the parents. Sometimes the parents forget that they're sending their kids to learn. And many times parents will come running to the school, screaming and yelling. They want the principal fired. They want that nun thrown out. If there's reason to get involved, then please, you must intervene. But at the same time, to be appreciative that there are people willing to do this. It is a vocation of sorts to be a teacher. To be able to convey to young people, to young minds, those things which are necessary for their formation. I was fortunate enough that my parents ensured that both me and my brothers went to Catholic school. Grade school, high school, seminary, Catholic college. The Sisters of St. Joseph who taught us were always in their habits. They were always telling us stories of the saints. They were always conveying to us the necessity of prayer, of being good Christian men and women, as well as teaching us arithmetic, math, science. Those women, those religious, convey to us the necessity of learning about the world and about God. I am deeply indebted to them. How many times have we said to a school teacher, I really appreciate what you do for my son or daughter? Or do we only speak to them when we have a complaint? It would be good for us from time to time just to thank those teachers, those principals. And if we don't have a school available, to thank those who are in the CCD program. But to make sure that it is the program it should be. Remember, there is a big difference between a child learning about Jesus one day a week as opposed to those who hear about him 5 days a week. It's important that in the home, it's continued by prayer. This document makes it clear, parents have a grave obligation to make sure their son or daughter know about God. They may not be able to explain all the refinements of theology any more than they can explain differential calculus or physical chemistry. But at the same time, they can encourage in them a desire. One thing I was told when I was in Gannon University with Father Levis, a good teacher is one who can inspire a student to aspire to greatness, to search for excellence, to want to know more for the sake of knowledge. Because as we know from St. Thomas Aquinas, the more we know, the more free we become. The more truth I am embraced with, the more freedom I am capable of. Because the intellect has the capacity to know so many things, but the will can only choose what the intellect knows. So if my education is limited, so is my freedom. So the more I know, the freer I become. And certainly the sacred sciences parallel and coincide and complement the secular sciences. So it's not a question of either or. Does Johnny or Susie get a good secular education or religious one? The two of them can go hand in hand and ought to. That's one thing that we learn, especially in the age of universities, that all knowledge, if it's true knowledge, which seeks the truth, glorifies God and enhances the human person. Pope John Paul himself, in a recent letter, soon after he was made the pontiff, Catechese Tridende, talks about the importance of catechesis. Not just at the elementary level, where kids are learning about Jesus and the commandments, but continuing all through our development as an adult. When I'm teaching RCIA, I notice lots of people are there who are already baptized Catholics. They're there because they want to know more about the faith. They want to learn. And so we have lots of adult education programs going on in parishes. This is part of this document, too, of ongoing formation of the faithful, that you don't necessarily have to enroll in a college course in theology to continue your formation. You can get the catechism and read it. You can participate in a Bible study group. You can go onto the internet. You can study. You can discuss. And especially at EWTN, we have so much available for you at our website at www.ewtn.com. A vast library of documents from Vatican II to Nicaea. We have important documents of the popes, encyclical letters, declarations. We have things from St. Thomas Aquinas, beautiful essays from the late and yet great Father Most. All this is available at your keyboard. We also have people who ask questions on our question board. These are just a few ways that you can get involved and continue your formation. But again, get the documents of Vatican II. Read them, pray them, and discuss them. Discuss them among yourselves with your friends, with your pastor. Maybe you could be an impetus in your parish for a small study group to look over the documents again, or the catechism, or not both. But remember, education is an inalienable right, and it doesn't go away because we hit a certain age. It's with us to the day we die, because we never stop learning until our soul leaves the body. So as long as we're still walking, talking, and we're alive, we have a duty and obligation to know more about God and the world He created. We thank you for tuning in. Please come back again, and may God bless you and Mary keep you.